Welcome, fellow seekers. My name is Nathan, and this is the Law of One and Spiritual Concepts podcast, where I share my interpretations of the Law of One and other related topics. Today, I'm blessed to be joined by Chris again for another exciting conversation. Let's get right into it. I hope you all enjoy. Today, I am grateful to be joined by Chris again. We're going to have a conversation today on the topic of love and fear, which I'm excited to have. So welcome back, Chris. How are you doing?
Thank you, Nathan. Great to be here. Doing really well, thanks. And I'm looking forward to what I think is an interesting topic that doesn't get talked about quite as often as perhaps it deserves.
Yeah, most definitely. So I guess if you don't mind starting off here, I talking a little bit about why you thought this was important in particular and maybe hitting some of the highlights there before we get into some of the finer details.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. You know, as I mentioned, I think it's an important topic in the Law of One that doesn't often get talked about or given perhaps the weight that it deserves. Why is the topic of kind of love and fear important? Well, it's because those two kind of competing vibrations are really the primary drivers or catalysts for our thoughts. And thoughts help to shape our reality. But beyond that, if you really listen to what Ra is saying, you know, at our essence, we are thoughts. The mm-hmm. very first session of the Ra materials, Ra says, we are basically dancing thoughts. Yeah. And they ask us, you know, took you then thought today? What thoughts did you think today? Mm-hmm. You know, was love contained and was service freely given? And I think, you know, that very first session, they were basically asking if we're on the path. Are you on the path to polarizing positively towards graduation?
Yeah.
Are you cultivating loving thoughts and serving others? So, you know, beyond just the idea that thoughts shape our reality, they influence our moods, our happiness level. When you get down to it, we are essentially thoughts. We are individuated quanta of the divine awareness of the Creator. And while we come into the physical for brief periods of time and we're attached to a physical body for purposes of learning lessons, the majority of our beingness exists in time-space rather than space-time. We are essentially thoughts. And so paying attention to our thoughts, being mindful of them, is a way not just to influence our moods, influence our happiness, but it's a way to essentially refine our being. It's the great journey. It's the, you know, the journey from head to heart that everybody who is polarizing positively aims to make. It's kind of what we come here for. And I think that, you know, if love and fear are the primary drivers of our thinking and our journey is to help move from motivations of fear into choosing motivations of love, I think that's kind of a really pivotal element of what Ra would call the inner work. It's the great kind of, you know, work of the alchemist, turning base thoughts and emotions into gold, you know, the coarse into the fine. And it's something that we often do unconsciously, you know, our thoughts many, many times a day, thousands of times a day. Exactly. So, you know, it's a very rubber hits the road area to focus on in terms of our awareness, in terms of our thinking, slowing our thought processes down, helping to identify what's driving them, to perhaps rebut them or challenge some of those, you know, maybe fear-based assumptions that are almost baked into us in our society.
Yeah, like recognizing it as you're going through and stuff, being consciously aware that this is coming up and, oh, I'm choosing to do this because I'm fearful, or just basically recognizing where you're at on that path to kind of direct you then from there, or to be able to choose to make the different response and find it more loving.
I think it's really a key to all of our spiritual journeys. I mean, I think I was well into my 30s when I kind of came to understand the novel concept that we get to choose our thoughts, which thoughts to believe. We don't choose our thoughts. We choose which ones that we want to energize, which ones we choose to believe. Yeah. And we do that by our focus, by focusing on them. And, you know, there's, you know, like a modality of called cognitive behavioral therapy. That's a way for people to help get out of kind of patterns of low self-esteem. And what it involves is kind of slowing down our thinking and kind of analyzing those thoughts a little bit, because what can happen is our thoughts can drive our mood, and quite often we'll end up in a low vibrational state, we'll end up in a bad mood without even realizing how we got there. And one of the helpful kind of lessons is when you feel yourself kind of getting pulled down, it's often the result of like a negative thought spiral. And at the end of it, you end up feeling, you know, if it goes on long enough, you can struggle with depression, things like that. And what cognitive behavioral therapy does is it identifies certain ways that we lie to ourselves, almost like propaganda that leads to our unhappiness. It's the, you know, there's what they call cognitive distortions, you know, like catastrophizing. Mm. If you have something bad happen or a couple things, it's very easy to say, oh, it's ruined. Oh, things are terrible. Oh, my life is horrible. You know, this idea of making a mountain out of a molehill is this idea.
And then once you get into that state, though, too, you're also viewing everything else through that lens of already being in this negative sense here. Oh, my God, since this happened, I'm already in a low state here. So everything else that happens after, whether it would trigger you otherwise, is then seen far more negatively.
It's a really important point, because as I like to joke with my wife, you know, we either have the rose color glasses or, you know, kind of the poop color glasses. And if we put those on, whatever we see is going to look like that.
Yes.
And another helpful thing that I learned over the course of the years is if you're feeling low, if you're feeling down, don't use that as a time to review your life, to take stock. You know, recognize that you're in a low state, a low vibrational state, that's not the time to look at big things, to self-evaluate. It's a time to focus on those little thoughts that got you there. Wait till you're feeling good about things, until you're in a more positive, higher vibrational state, to kind of take stock in your life or your career or your relationships, whatever those big ticket items are in life.
Yeah, kind of accept it for what it is and acknowledge that. Like we're likely not going to be in this high vibe state 100% of the time. And that's okay. You got to accept that and just kind of work through those tough times to be able to get yourself back and refreshed to be able to be kind of looking through some of the higher perspectives, I guess, from there.
I think it's true. And a lot of the practice is just kind of creating space for them. Don't resist them. Don't fight them. You kind of dismantle those things through kind of letting them, giving them space, and then loving them, recognizing that they have a purpose, that, you know, these types of things are there to help us evolutionarily, but they're no longer serving us, perhaps. So there's a couple other common, what I would call cognitive distortions. You know, one is personalizing, you know, the idea that somebody else's actions were intended to be a reflection of what they think about you. Mm. You know, it's kind of when typically most people, they're doing things for their own reasons. You know, they have their own dialogue going on. They're not thinking about us when they do things.
They're projecting their current state onto you at that point. Not really a direct reflection of you, but it's on where they're at mentally, physically, emotionally, all of it.
That's a huge, I think, nugget of truth. A related thing is like mind reading, thinking that you know what people are thinking, attributing something to them that may have absolutely nothing to do with their true motivations, that, you know.
Yeah.
So I think these are ways that, you know, we can recognize when, in essence, we're kind of poisoning our own self-dialogue. You know, as Ross says, the mind contains all things. And it's almost like, you know, it's constantly feeding us all kinds of things. You know, some people call that inner voice the annoying roommate. Mm. It's just, it's just sending us, you know, it's like being at the end of a conveyor belt and it's just sending random things to us all day long. And our task is to sort what's valuable from the stuff that isn't, what's useful to us. And I think that based on what we choose to focus on, what we choose to energize, the positive thoughts, the loving thoughts, it becomes reinforcing over time. We get less junk coming down the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
You know, I think too many people focus on the negative and it becomes a self-selecting kind of cycle. So
it's the same thing, just in the opposite direction there, right? If you keep choosing that negative view or that negative distorted outlook on things, then it's just, that's what you keep going to. But like you said, if you can train yourself or consciously look at these things and look at it a little more positively or in that loving sense, that becomes stronger and stronger over time. So it's works the same way, but just can be spiraling you downhill, whether you realize it or not, could be a big factor to it.
I think that's really true. And it can have a profound kind of impact on our lives as to, you know, which thoughts we choose to believe and empower. And we can turn, you know, what could be otherwise limiting beliefs into empowering beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, that help build faith, help build will, help build love and acceptance. And I think it all starts with, you know, the primal catalyst, the polar opposite vibrational catalyst of love and fear. So I think that's why Ra kind of talks about this, why they emphasize the importance of our thinking, and why it's a helpful topic to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And just the mind in general is such a complicated thing. It's part of the archetypal mind. There's all this dedicated information to it, with basically being able to direct your thoughts consciously and do it in a loving manner is really the big part of all the training to this. So yeah, I think, yeah, that's a wonderful introduction there to the topic. So I think maybe let's get in a little more of the nitty gritty here and look at, I guess let's kind of try to define love a little bit as best we can to some of this, because I think at least to start, most commonly everyone looks at it as more of a feeling or an emotion. So having compassion or just having an open heart as you look at different things is love. But Ra also talks about a little more metaphysical aspect to love here too, which is like this primal energy that is the creator condensed down, making all of creation around it. So it's not even a thing that we can really conceptualize, I almost feel, but it's behind everything that exists or that we can see in this physical illusion. So there's a lot. So I have a few Ra quotes, but I'll open up to you real quick to see if you have any other definitions or something you'd add to love.
Now, I think you're right. And it's one of those things where, you know, Ra talks about the paucity of language to really capture these things. You know, love is a term that's overused and poorly understood. But it really is the vibrational underpinning of all of creation. You know, the logos is itself pure love. I think it was Scott Mandelker that described love as the creator recognizing itself within its separate parts. You know, it's this kind of tied to the idea of unity. It's this the unity vibration experienced between individuated portions of creation a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. That's beautiful there.
And it's powerful. So it's a resonance. It's an energy. And, you know, the Confederation sources like Ra and Kuo, they refer to it as the original thought, the one original thought. And they describe, you know, we're still one with all that there is, but in our perception, we're trying to get back to that one original thought, that thought of unity, of love. And, you know, when we've talked about some of the NDEs in our last podcast, and it's really palpable when people are on the other side of the veil, they feel it to their very core. It's a healing. It's a sense of being home, of being infinitely loved. It's this feeling that no matter what we're experiencing, what we're perceiving, we're always kind of held in the arms of the creator, of unity, and that there's nothing we can do to truly ever separate ourselves from that. But the more that we can kind of tune in to that vibration, you know, if we're polarizing positively through love and acceptance, the better we can accelerate our journey back.
Yeah, I think so. And kind of along the lines of what you're talking about there, I was looking at also the idea of actually noticing when you're in that more loving state or loving mindset that your body just feels lighter. You seem like you have more energy, a little more, you know, buzzing or something, and your heart area is warm and stuff. Whereas when we're in the fear states, which we'll kind of get into a little bit too, but it's just a more constricted, tight, heavy feeling. So if you pay attention to the way your body feels, it's like you can see just that easily where you're at and notice the differences between the two.
It's so true. And, you know, we talk about, it's often like we talk about love and hate as though they're opposites. But I think in reality, hate is closer to love. They're both, you know, you can get hot with hatred, with anger. Fear is like the shutting down of ourselves energetically. To the extent that love is an opening, a clearing of the lower energy centers, an opening of the heart space, it's a feeling of love, of acceptance, of unity. You know, we feel warm. I think that fear is basically the vibrational opposite. It's shutting that all down so that we're, instead of feeling expanded, feeling a sense of unity, we're feeling like contracted, we're feeling cold, we're feeling shut down, isolated. You know, we talk about, you know, we shiver when we're really afraid. And, you know, we say that we're frozen in fear. We're so cold that, you know, we're so afraid that we can't even breathe sometimes. We can't move.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's a total energetic shutdown that triggers just the survival, like the lower three energy centers, survival, self, separation.
Yeah, you're just trying to get by at that point too and just figure out where you're going to get food tonight, where you're going to live tonight, all these different kind of things. But it's just, yeah, you're very low rays that you're not even seeing things from the higher perspective. But that's well said with the way the energy centers affect both love and fear at that point.
And, you know, the foot soldier of fear is control, which is really the, you know, the key to service to self polarity. And I feel like fear is also used on a large scale to control us. You know, with our media, it's like we have an industry that's really trying to pump us full of fear, of conflict, of, you know, lack.
Yeah.
And I feel like when we are filled with fear, when it energizes those lower energy centers, we're not thinking clearly. We're not thinking lovingly. It's a way to hack into our herd mentality, our feeling for self-preservation. And we tend to not exercise good judgment when we're afraid. You know, yeah. There's a lot of terrible things in the course of history that have been done out of fear by people and by societies. So I feel like it's a way to kind of suppress our spiritual growth, mm-hmm. Through the news, through filling us with a fear of the other. There's so many different fears that, you know, and it's not just the news, it's advertising. They play on subtle fears of social acceptance, of inadequacy, of, you know, being alone.
Yeah.
There's so many
body
ways.
Insecurities, all those kind of things.
Yes, yes. And, you know, these reach, our fear instinct is very strong. It's a survival instinct that carried us through second density. But I feel like the task of third density is to move beyond that, is to move from survival mode into a more loving, expansive mode.
Yeah, because you're giving up your energy, basically, as you were doing. I was thinking about, it's kind of a silly example, but I was on the way driving today. There's this one road that they have all these kind of like creepy signs up saying spirits are watching, photos of like it and stuff. I'm like, I don't really like driving down that road. Then I think about it, I'm like, why don't I? So it's like I'm giving into the fear then of this, that whatever, there's something metaphysical or something's going to happen or not is, you know, coming after you. But I'm giving in. So I'm giving my energy away to whether it's the people, whether it's whatever it is there by avoiding this road here and stuff. So like I said, silly example, but you can kind of relate that to a lot of other scenarios there. But when you avoid something because you're fearful of it, you are giving your energy away. And I think in one of the quotes we were talking about too with Carla there, that she ended up being able to get mentally and spiritually strong with love there, where she was able to almost reject then the negative fifth NC entity that was constantly attacking them. So she's able to counter that by strengthening with love.
It's true. And there's that one episode, I think they were looking at a new house towards the end of the channelings, and she had like a, she might have been running, but she had like a breathing episode where she felt like she couldn't breathe. And this was the, you know, their Orion friend kind of energizing this element within her, finding a chink of fear that she could, that this being could energize. And Ross says something like, you know, if she had been prone to hysteria, that it could have resulted in her death, basically. So that, you know, fear can kind of get a life of its own and really shut us down completely if it's, you know,
yeah,
if it's bad enough. We've heard anecdotal stories of being scared to death. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's sometimes that you can have such a horrific shock. I mean, I've heard of stories that, depending on how terrifying they are, people's hair has turned white. You know, it can affect us in a very physical sense, up to and including like shutting us down if it's powerful enough.
Yeah, I think so. And that kind of reminds me, I know one of the other, so this was one of the quotes that Rob was talking about. It was more of the cattle mutilations, but I feel like this also applies to just how fear is used at that point, where Ross saying the thought form entities feed upon fear so that they're able to do precise damage according to systems of symbology. So that was specific to removing certain organs, but that can also be the same thing here. Like you're talking about turning someone's hair white, or if they're feeding off of you, they're draining your life force energy and they're taking it on themselves. So it can be used in all sorts of different ways, mentally, physically, emotionally, as almost attack method control.
It's so true. And that, if we resonate like negative, fearful thoughts enough, we can attract, you know, for want of a better word, vampiric type entities from, you know, the elemental to lower astral forms. And I remember reading something, I think it was one of the Kuo channelings, that was talking about how hospitals can often be a place where, because of repeated, you know, experiences in this particular location of fear, of anguish, of grief, that it can be attractive to, you know, lower astral type beings that energize that even more. So, I mean, I've never quite liked hospitals. I don't feel like it's a place for healing.
I was thinking the same thing too.
And I think that maybe there's a reason for that. Like energetically, we realize that like this isn't necessarily a place, a home for love.
Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of good things happen there, you know, whatever. But I get what you mean. You walk through the door. Most people don't want to be there because it's usually tied to something negative. I'm here because I broke my leg. I need surgery. I need whatever. So it's usually not good and associated with trauma. But yeah, like I know a lot of positive happens there, but I feel the same way walking in the door. It's like, this is not where I want to be. You just get that tightness feeling, it seems, right away.
And I want to make the extreme disclaimer that in the worst case, negative beings can only energize what we're already thinking. They can't, you know, we can be offered thoughts, but what we choose to take up and focus on is up to us. We have ultimate free will. So there's nothing, you know, there's nothing that we can't protect ourselves just from kind of minding our garden a little bit. And that's, you know, that's where recognizing fear and making a conscious choice towards love and acceptance, I think, is really, it's our daily grist for the mill. It's the weeding of our garden, you know, watering the flowers, pulling that weeds. And it's something that happens 1,000 times a day. And the more we can be mindful of it, kind of the prettier our experience will be. And
yeah,
the more we'll refine our beingness into something more loving.
I think you're exactly right. And that kind of, I was thinking a little bit about when we're talking along the lines of fear as well. And the whole story of Maldek that Ra comes back and talks about how it was this negative service to self planet there, basically, although they thought they were being of service to others, really were pretty far along the negative path, it sounds like. And long story short, ended up blowing up their planet. But the crazy part to me was after that, they got tied in a knot of fear. So it was something that couldn't even escape for, I think it was 100,000 years there, that they were stuck in this knot. So like the most extreme amount of fear is really constricting and tying you down at that point to where the Confederation couldn't even reach these entities. I think they even said they didn't even realize they were conscious at one point as well, too. So it's just, I can't imagine that level of fear coming together, not allowing anything to penetrate or be able to, you know, to be able to release that or even work through it.
All right, and I think that gets to this idea of like fear being a contracting, a hardening vibration and isolating. It's the vibration of separation, and that it can get so pronounced that we can become for a period of time like so separate, we're unreachable. We're so cut off. And I feel like when Ross says that it took several hundred thousand years of working with these entities to the point where they remembered that they were conscious, I think that that's really kind of what we're getting at. They realized that, no, we can choose to heal. We can choose to release this fear. We're not a slave to fear, that we ultimately hold the keys to our own cell through healing, through, you know, recognizing that we can direct our will where we want. So
yeah, 100,000 years just to get that little thread in there to have them realize that that's a path or that's an option on there. It blows my mind when you put it in that kind of perspective there. And you know, I'm sure time's always a funky thing, especially in the Law of One with a lot of these things here, but it's so extreme, it seems like, at that point.
And I think kind of following up on that, you know, the qualitative difference of like love and acceptance versus fear, one is expanding, softening, accepting, you know, everything, including ourselves. That's that vibration of love. And whereas the fear is it's the contracting, it's hardening, it's calcifying, it's accepting less and less of what goes on around us. And, you know, Ra describes the fifth density service to self being as being extremely compacted and essentially making its home in a barren place. It's like a black magician living in a cave, and they're so negative, they no longer see any virtue in other selves. And to the extent they feel like they need catalyst, they create it for themselves. It's the ultimate portrait of isolation, of separation. They've taken that as far as it could possibly go. They feel like they've controlled everything, you know, with like perfect will, you know, and so that
organization and everything together.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the opposite of that is the softening. It's the accepting everything for what it is. And, you know, Ra says that, I love this quote, that the source of all distortion is the limitation of the viewpoint.
Mm.
That which we choose, you know, this is, we're on a journey. We come here by choice. But the idea is the more we can learn consciously to love and accept everything happening around us and ourselves, that our viewpoint gets wider and wider, and we're slowly kind of expanding our beingness vibrationally on the path back to unity. So it's like the opposite of hardening and contracting. It's kind of releasing control and allowing others to be, you know, that idea of like, you do you, that it's okay. I don't need to control you. You know, all I need to do is send you love. And, you know, if you ask, help you on your journey.
And I think that's why that kind of makes that primal fundamental choice there between the two of love and fear is what you're summarizing basically. And it's one thing, you know, I try to think about throughout the day or stay conscious, because when you think about it, if you are in the loving state, that's so that will be reflected in your thought, word, and deed, and versus the same thing with fear in your thought, word, and deed. So if you're paying attention to the direction of what you're saying, the way you're looking at things, like we said, projecting or staying in the negative state, you can pick up right away that you're not in that correct state as well, or you can kind of change your mind or change your viewpoint from there as well. But it seems like that's that fundamental choice. How many choices do we make a day that you have that opportunity to look at things differently?
I think that's true. And, you know, the idea that we are thoughts first and then words and then deeds, that under, you know, there's a quote, I think it's from Quo, that's basically focus on on being the vibration of love first, and then focusing on your speech, and then focusing on your action. You know, Rob mentioned, you know, in giving out that 51% service to others threshold for graduating in service to others to fourth density, you know, they couch it in that terms because as humans, we tend to think more in terms of ethics, in terms of behavior. And so they gave us that standard as a way that we could easily relate to. But I think, you know, what they really say is that it's about our ability to work with and handle a greater amount of love and light. You know, we are basically like a conduit of energy centers for the love and the light of the Creator. And the more we can, you know, release our lower blockages, open up the heart center, we're letting more light in. And that's basically that intelligent infinity that is this expansive, growth-oriented energy. So
I think I'd like to get into some of those a little bit more, find some of it here too, but I think now would be a good point if you're willing to read that quote you found there,
sure,
if you can, on the love and fear. I think this one was really impactful.
I'd love to. It's a little bit long, so I'd ask your listeners to bear with me. This is from the March 1st, 1998 channeling of Kuo. And for those that aren't familiar, Kuo is, it's a blended entity that includes both Ra, Latui, Hatan. It's a blending of different higher density beings that was put together by the Confederation after the Ra contact in a way that it would allow the wisdom of Ra to be brought through, but in a slightly stepped down blended version that would allow Carla to channel it consciously without having to go into full trance and without the protection of the group of the three that they had in place while Don Elkins was still alive. So with that, I'll read this. To those who are not seeking spiritually, this may seem fairly obvious and not worth mentioning. Of course, each entity is separate. Of course, each entity is alone. Each has common concerns with others of like mind, but with physical eyes, physical senses, there's no question but that each entity is alone, apart from and over against other selves, outer situations in general, and the entire environment in which the entity dwells. It is instinct. The instinct of the physical body that carries you about, that begins this discriminatory process. The infant slowly realizes that some of its needs will not be met. It begins to realize that some things can be hurtful and does not want to repeat experiences of pain. So the walls begin to go up about the young heart. Don't touch the stove. Don't pat the cat too hard. Don't pick up the dog. Don't. As the child grows, it learns how to defend the self. It experiments with ways of relating to other selves, and except in very unusual situations, by the time this entity is considered a mature adult by the surrounding society, this entity has become one, to some extent, controlled by fear. We changed from discussing pride to fear because the one known as Jay was asking which was the ultimate catalyst to be dealt with within third density. And we would respond in general that the only catalyst dealt with in third density is fear and love. The entity begins its babyhood wrapped in love, love known throughout its system, and it learns to close itself, to become apart, to become defended, because it seems fairly obvious that there are things to fear. There are entities and objects out there that can harm and hurt. So the spiritual life within third density may be described as either a learning how to love or a learning how to release fear. For fear is that distortion of love that posits a separation betwixt beings and things, thus occasioning the necessity for having some sort of response to these persons or things that will tend to increase safety and comfort. We are not saying that these contents are incorrect, for the entity's fears are real. There is that which is feared. It is an illusion. However, the illusion cannot be brutally penetrated and torn away, for that would also do harm to the developing self. Indeed, when one is working with one's fears, attempting to see the love behind the apparent separation, the most nearly correct attitude is simply the slowing down of self, quieting the mind, stilling the emotion until you're able to sit with whatever fear that is, not removing it harshly, but perhaps moving away strands from that tapestry in front of you, gradually making an opening through which you can see the light. As long as you think you have a self that you need to defend, you shall be working with spiritual pride. And so entities, for the most part, are working with this no matter how persistently and purely and devotionally they have sought year after year. Yet still, there is the sense of, I am searching, I am looking, I am seeking to become the best I can. Conversely, we have found that coming into a fuller awareness of self is actually a process of subtraction, simplification, and elimination of things from the defended self until finally the self is empty and the barriers are down. Is this safe to do within your density? No, not at all. Not in the sense of the preservation of the physical body, the emotional body, or the spiritual body within incarnation. What we are trying to say is that it is not a terrible thing to be working with pride, or in general, to be working with one's fear. This is part of what one is doing in this illusion. This is what you are supposed to be doing. This is your subject matter, fear and love, boundaries and unity.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that kind of sums up everything that we're talking through in a good sense too. And it's nice that they kind of look back as well, saying that a lot of this is almost learned, that you've developed and learned this fear throughout your life. But then the real work here is to then analyze that and look back at it and kind of refine that and lose that, so you become lighter and you kind of open yourself up a little bit more then to the loving aspect.
I think that's exactly it. And the idea is that when we sense fear, we should examine them. You know, what is it that we are protecting, and what are we protecting it against? And there's a different channeling where Kuo basically says, when you really look at it, I mean, we are eternal beings of light and love, that everything that we perceive as negative is actually food for our growth. So that ultimately, the only thing that we need to protect ourselves from is being pulled away or distracted from the positive path of seeking. That's the only thing that we actually need to guard ourselves against.
And it's so simple, right?
It sounds so easy. So, you know, they talk about building a habit of love. You know, that's the idea. And we had that quote from Ra where they mention, you know, the doubling effect, that the expansion of the viewpoint. And what they say is, you know, when they were asked for a exercise to do to help polarize positively, the very first exercise they gave was, you know, that the moment contains love and that we should look for that in every moment and essentially choose to be that love in the moment if it can't be found. And they describe it as such. You know, even though it's kind of challenging and we're going to, you know, lose some efficiency, and that it has a doubling effect, that it's such a central act of will that it builds on itself and it kind of redounds to the depths of our being to make a conscious decision of love. So I think the key takeaway is to choose love and learn to recognize when we're having fearful thoughts. You know, one of the things they talk about is that's kind of baked into our society is we're kind of trained to be practically minded, quote unquote, to put comfort and security and safety at the top of our list. And everything else is kind of secondary. And I think, you know, if you really read between the lines, what they're saying is choose love and acceptance, choose serving others ahead of comfort you know, prioritize that above comfort and security. I don't think they're saying that we have to get rid of those altogether, but they talk about the idea that the true addict lives more and more day by day. I think so much of our fears are fear for the future, fear of poverty, fear of being alone, fear of rejection, fear of, you know, not having enough, that we're robbing, you know, the present moment in our lives a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. This is almost like more of a focusing on the present moment, not fearing anxiety of what's to come or what happened previously on there, but being in that moment. And I think that's a key takeaway as well of kind of what we were talking about earlier with the energy center clearing too, because once you're in that loving, accepting state, you're in the heart. And as the adept that you referred to, they're working much more from the indigo center, but you can't do that when you're, you know, constricted or blocked in the lower centers, worrying about some of these constant fears or things holding you back at that point. So it's almost the natural growth to be doing this in our service to others path. So it's, yeah, it's supposed to just naturally come with you on there, but it's not always that easy. So,
but I think like the Buddhists kind of recognize this principle a little bit, how like the monks, they can beg rice for today's meal, but they can't beg food for tomorrow. And, you know, it's a little bit similar to Jesus when he would send his disciples off into the fields to share his message. And they were, you know, they didn't carry supplies. They were just sent off. And there's a famous passage where they were walking through like a grain field and they were rubbing the kernels of grain between their hands and eating them. You know, it's this idea that the further along the spiritual path we get, the less we focus on comfort, security, the more we recognize that the universe will provide whatever we need. It gets into that discussion that Ra has with Carla when she decided, you know, she had made a New Year's resolution to stop buying herself clothes for a year. Mm-hmm. And Ra was saying how, like, she framed this decision in terms of a life of poverty, and that she should think about true richness of being, which I think is very different from safety, security. It's, you know, it's having love, it's having positive relationships. It's feeling that love in the moment gives us that true richness of being that all the possessions in the world don't. And, you know, it's not, you don't have to look far to see very wealthy people that are really unhappy, clearly just kind of miserable people, because all they can focus on is what they don't have. And they're so caught up in power that they miss all that they do.
Right. And it's like a lot of them, I hear from people say it as well, it's like there's still a hole in there that they can't fill. And that tends to be that connection with spirit and that love at that point too, where if, you know, yeah, we can live some great lives if you have a lot of money and go around, but it just seems like you're still going to be kind of caught in that same cycle there where you're going to be missing something all the time. And quite frankly, missing the point of a lot of this incarnation here. I mean, sure, it's to experience whatever you want as well. So, you know, give them power to that. But it just seems like as well that there's always one more step to it. And that is that love and acceptance that follows on this positive path of third density here.
It's true. And I think, you know, our society, Western society, it's kind of baked in to be competitive, to try to be materialistic, keeping up with the Joneses, to, you know, once we have money, then we crave power. And it's about playing, you know, how many billionaires are just using the world as like a stage for their own power games, but it's never quite enough. And I feel like once you realize what's really important is just kind of cultivating love, seizing those little opportunities for service in life. That's really what's important. It's not, you know, power, you know, the, you know, fame, all those things that social media is kind of trying to convince us of.
Yeah. And that, I'll add on to that power as well too, because it's not the power over others, because there is, once going down the positive path, there's a spiritual power that's built up in that exact sort of situation we were talking about. The moment contains love. When you keep building on that, you get to go and experience higher levels of basically spirituality at that point and have a greater power from that sense to be able to do service from, to have that will and faith to continue to build on and be a greater service to the world. But it's a little different than the physical power that we look for, or money buying power that everybody thinks here. It's between the spiritual and the physical.
It's a really important point of clarification. Thank you. You know, the whole idea of things coming through the positive polarity versus coming to the negative polarity. It's not about things. It's about, you know, building positive polarity so that we become somewhat magical. We can effectuate changes in consciousness at will, which is essentially polarizing more towards love. You know, we can use, we get, and then there's also the power of the light strength that we'll get into in our next topic, that the more we polarize positively, we develop power to heal, power to overcome in a spiritually elevated sense that doesn't have to do with power over others or the power that comes from possessions, money.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think this is kind of a good segue to another kind of subtopic, which is the idea of purity as it's used in the Law of One.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about different ideas of that, and it's really like a focusing of desire, of the will, so that we are kind of singularly focused on seeking the truth, of serving others. There's an aspect of it, of a qualitative aspect. It's not just about quantity that I think they get at. It's a way to really supercharge our polarity.
Yeah, I think so. And I was kind of putting it down here as well as more of a concept of the strength of an entity's will to serve. But what's unique to that then is that it can be seen as a positive or a negative thing. So the negative path also has a level of purity to their seeking as well, just as the positive path does. But they're going more pure on the self-service path, whereas the entities over here are on a more of a direction to serve others. So it's kind of unique when they look at purity and distortion, is that it can be applied to both paths there.
I think it's true. And like a really important distinction is that the service to others polarity focuses only on the purity of kind of the will and intention, not on the result. You know, that there is no, as Ross says, there's no virtue in the counting in terms of how was my impact in manifesting what I wanted to do. It's the idea that I'm going to approach this with the highest ideal, the best intent that I can, and I'm not going to worry about what happens. It's the idea of casting your bread upon the water. Do that selfless act and let it go where it will. Don't worry about the effect. And I think the opposite of that for service to self beings is that the ends justify the means. And we see that over and over and over again.
Right.
The service to self being is results oriented. All they care about is what they manifest in the illusion. They don't care how they have to get it, who they have to hurt, what they have to do. And I feel like in our movies, in our common kind of culture, that is so encouraged in us, you know, to achieve outcomes, to effectuate outcomes.
Yeah, to be attached to that outcome too there. And like, so that's the main opposites, it seems like, right? On the positive path, you're not, you're just doing the best you can in that moment, whereas others are hoping for this outcome. I need to control, I need to do this or that. And I guess when I think along the lines of the purity there as well, you can look at some of the actions. Like, maybe you are holding a door open for somebody, but are you irritated while you're doing it? You're not really there to serve them or help someone across the street or vice versa, any of those things. So there's a level to each of these acts. Is it truly selfless, or are you doing this out of obligation where it is not completely pure? So there's like fine lines to all this, but I think that's also what tends to also define your percentage of service to others there. You're 51%. As I purify more, I'm getting higher in the percentages, but you're not concerned with it because you were doing what's natural or what feels right in the moment.
I think that's a great point. You know, there's a disconnect there. We're so used to thinking about results that, you know, somebody that's trying to help somebody because they think it's what they should be doing, because they think that they'll be punished, or that they'll, you know, if they're doing it out of fear, you could be doing the right thing for the wrong reason. But conversely, if you're doing it from a place of love and a genuine desire for service without regard to the outcome, it doesn't matter how it works out. So it might ultimately prove to be the wrong thing, but you did it with the right reason.
And intention is like one of the keywords I'd written down for this here as well. As long as you are doing this with an open heart or trying your best to be of service in that moment, that's really all you can do. And that's like the building block for being of service at that point. Maybe you learn from there, but if you were going into it with the right intention, I mean, that's all we can ask.
I think you're right. And it's a subtle sub theme that runs through the Law of One, through the raw channelings, the idea of, you know, it relates to truth a little bit, you know, the whole idea that if they were going to have photographs taking of the working, it needed to be an actual working. It couldn't be a mock-up and it's something that, like, if you look at our advertising, they're all lies. You know, it's portraying, you know, the picture of the Big Mac has the patty shoved to the front of the bun. It looks four times the size of what you're actually going to receive.
Yeah, it's 200 pounds in one pill.
Exactly. Puffery. And it's all subtle forms of deception that is kind of polluting us a little bit to think that's how we're supposed to be, I guess. You know, that the ends justify the means. You know, how many wealthy folks have gotten that way through really despicable things, you know, we're almost encouraged to think that we should catch as catch can, and that it's more important that we get ahead than what we have to do to get there. When in truth, it's the exact opposite, unless you want to polarize in spirit, you know, in service to self, that it really doesn't matter what we do. It's how we go about it and what our intentions are.
And I think that kind of translates as well to like your morality, ethics, and virtue as you kind of walk through some of these ideas here. So you can increase your polarity or your purity by consciously intending to, okay, I'm going to do this meditation every day. I'm going to do this ritual, whatever it is, to be of better service as I continue the route there. So there's ways that I feel like you can almost refine purity, but it's more of with that positive intention behind it all. But little things to get you closer, I guess.
It's true. And I kind of look at the purity of intention of our will. It's almost like the octane level of fuel that you can be putting fuel in your tank, but the purer it is, the cleaner it burns. And, you know, it's okay if we're driving around town, but if we want to leave like the pull of the earth, that rocket fuel has to be very pure for us to kind of leave the pull of our planet, the pull of gravity. And I think spiritually it's a little bit the same. There's a refining process. Our motives, our love, our selflessness gets refined over time, and that purification of it helps launch us even further by nature of what we're doing. And that they talk about it when they're talking about the tarot is that we also attract like a light strength. We talked about the power that based on the purity of what we're able to kind of manifest, we attract help. You know, the great cat, the protector, in the one card that Ra talks about.
Experience of the mind.
So that we have a certain power of light strength that are attracted, you know, light beings that are attracted to us based on purity of our seeking. And they want to help us along if we can kind of invoke that power along the way. So I think it's an interesting...
There's a reverse kind of side to that as well, too. So, yeah, like as you said, they compare the purity to a light, and such an intensity of light attracts attention. So that also attracts the negative attention there. And I think that kind of fits perfectly with your analogy of kind of blasting off up into space, where maybe as you're beginning on that path a little more, you're getting more of that negative attention that's keeping you down, keeping you up. But once you kind of blast up through the atmosphere in that sense there, you're beyond a lot of this negative attack and issues that really come out of a lot of that there. You're somewhat beyond it. You've already purified your intentions. You've purified your service to that extent.
It's true. And, you know, they talk about the idea, you know, that basically we're offered temptation. And it's a way to further refine and purify our motives, our intention. We're going to be tempted along the way. And it's through staying focusing our will on serving others, on seeking the truth, and avoiding those temptations that we continue to add to our purity. And they describe that, you know, eventually, we become so focused in serving others that we almost become impervious. We create our own catalyst, that the most horrible fortune in life is seen with an eye towards challenges made and opportunities for growth. So the more we build, purify, and build that dedication to serve, the less that we are affected by kind of the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, as Shakespeare said.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, that's well said at that point too. So,
and one other thing I wanted to mention, I know we want to wrap this up, is that there's a really good channeling from Kuo that's from 2021. It's December 13th of 2021, where they talk about purity at length, and they talk about how it's been twisted and distorted through kind of Orion-influenced religions over many, many years to become more of a stumbling block for people. The idea of purity has become like fuel for judgment of self, of others, fuel for control, fuel, you know, controlling ourselves, controlling others, fuel for feeding a sense of unworthiness, and that it's an area that has been kind of co-opted by some influenced organized religions to make us trip up and pull us away from the true path. And they talk about the idea of there's a difference between just self-reflection in a loving, compassionate way, where can we do better, versus self-judgment, where we're kind of condemning ourselves. And especially with like these Orion influenced concepts of hell, of damnation, of eternity, you know, and that we need to basically punish ourselves. Yeah. This is how like a simple concept of like being pure in our motives, in serving others and seeking the truth, has been twisted and distorted by some common religions to become a concept that actually pulls us off the path.
Yeah, like the thou shalt not sort of thing here of then you feel guilty or like judging yourself or doing something wrong, sinning in all that sense. So again, giving your power away instead of like looking back at this in the loving sense of, okay, I realized throughout my virtues that this was wrong, but accepting for what it is, and you're able to grow from that, move on from there. So
it's so true. And it's in keeping with the way of service to self, of kind of aping positivity, but wrapping it in a veneer, you know, an underlying approach of like control and judgment that actually detunes us and keeps us from evolving spiritually.
Yeah, it's like the deception of the whole process there, basically, of making you think that you're doing something good by going to church and following these rules and all of that sort of thing, when in reality you're actually being controlled, it seems, in some cases. But we seem to see that more and more. But I would say that it seems a lot of people are aware of that concept and waking up to that idea here these days as well too. So we're finally raising the consciousness enough to see through some of these, I guess I'll just call them games.
But yeah. I think that's a great point. And, you know, before anyone thinks we're bashing religion, Ross says that they all contain a path for the pure spiritual seeker, and that, but we need to kind of sort the, you know, the positive from the negative messages, because they've become polluted over time.
And definitely,
you know it by its fruit. If it encourages fear, unworthiness, judgment, control, it's negative philosophy. It encourages love and acceptance. It's positive philosophy. So
yeah, well said. I think that's probably a great point to end on here, at least for this conversation. Yeah, man, this has been such a fun conversation on love and fear. I think we got into a lot of different directions with it. But yeah, Chris, I really appreciate you joining me today, and hope the listeners enjoyed this conversation. So any closing thoughts on your part?
Oh, it's been my pleasure. You know, the message that I would want your listeners to take away is just to pay more attention to your thoughts throughout the day. Slow your thought processes down. Try to analyze where they're coming from. There's a whole TED talk where someone turned their whole life around just by asking themselves, are my thoughts serving me? How are they behaving? And I think that's a critical thing. We can turn our thoughts into allies instead of enemies. And we do that by slowing them down, by recognizing fear-based thinking, by slowly releasing those fearful patterns that we have, and by consciously choosing more loving and accepting thoughts, so that we can ultimately build a habit of love one thought at a time. And I would just say that every day we build the house that we live in out of thoughts. And I would encourage your listeners to focus their will, and build a foundation of love.
Well said. I think that's amazing, and I would highly encourage everyone to consider that as well throughout their day. So, all right. Well, thanks again, Chris. I look forward to doing the next one with
you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.